It's so easy to fall into these rabbit holes. You know, once you click on one ad for an AI thing on Facebook, you're going to get inundated with 30 more.
I love the comment you made about how so many of these specialty tools that we see are really, and I'm going to paraphrase here, this is not the words you use, but are really just lipstick on top of ChatGPT, and they're still using ChatGPT behind the scenes.
One thing that I believe in is helping them solve a simple problem, like the main problem in their business first with it or their organization.
Do us a favor yourself. You know your style, you know what you write. Why don't you go ahead, take a PDF of your book and go ahead and upload it to ChatGPT and ask it to write like you, and then tell me how close did it come?
Create me a landing page, and then it's like, unlock your game-changing potential as you delve into, you know, and it sounds like that. And I've seen so many
Yes, yeah.
sales pages. I don't call businesses out, but I'm like,
Hi, and welcome to the 91 Day AI Transformation Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Mast, and I'm really excited today to have Kimberly Mays with me. Kimberly and I just recently met online, and I learned of her and some of her, I don't want to say exploits, but some of her skills and all that, and was really excited to chat with Kimberly. So Kimberly, I want to say thank you for joining us today. I'm excited to get to know you a little bit better. Before we dive in, for those that may not be familiar with you, Kimberly, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and who it is that you serve?
Yeah, sure. So, hi everyone. My name is Kimberly Inez Mays. I help small, medium-sized businesses leverage technology, demystify technology, so that they can generate and nurture leads with marketing, automation, and AI. And just really excited to be here as well.
Well, thank you. I'm again thrilled you took the time and put this together. So when you and I met, I don't remember exactly if it was in one of the many AI forums I'm on or where I saw you, but I was really impressed with your presence and the things that you were doing, some of the things you were talking about. Talk to us a little bit from your perspective. How did you get in? Let's first talk marketing and then we'll move into AI. But how did you get into the marketing biz and helping small businesses with their brand and the things that you do? Tell us a little bit about your backstory.
Yeah, so my backstory is that it was all a happy accident. I went to
I
school
love
for
that.
computer science like many, many years ago, and I was always a curious person. I always liked to tinker, even as a child. So back in the like late 90s, I would learn how to build websites, web pages, and I just did it as a hobby. Fast forward, looking for a job after college, where I landed was in email marketing. And I said, okay, well, this is different. This is new. This was before the iPhone. This was before Gmail. So we had to hand code all of our emails. And
Yes.
our clients were Fortune 1000 companies, you know, hospitality, retail, pharmaceuticals. So we had to pay close attention to detail. So while I was doing the grunt work building all of the HTML and everything for the emails, I absorbed a lot of knowledge about marketing, about how different brands show up, how they segment their audience, what pieces of content to show a certain segment of the audience. I learned about loyalty programs. I learned about different types of data brokerage and how to merge data together. So even though I'm a technologist at heart, I like to use it as part of an overall strategy. And at the time, these tools were only available to big companies that could afford these types of services. And this was prior to your MailChimp and all of that. So what makes me excited right now is it's been so democratized where you can literally carry it around in your pocket, like on your phone, and do the exact same things that I did back in the early 2000s. So that's
Yes.
really how I got into the marketing space. So that was my day job, my job out of college. And I did that for about, I say through various companies, maybe about like, I would say a little, somewhere between 15 and 20 years. And then for myself, I start out as a web designer doing it for companies, doing it for small businesses and coaches. And I realized that a lot of them build the front end first, the aesthetics. They want the business cards, the logos, the websites. They want to look the part, but there needs to be a system and an engine behind the scenes. And
So
that's when I
true.
pivoted to saying, okay, well, anybody, any Joe Schmo can build your website. You can even drag and drop now. We have that technology. But what you really need is the strategy to be able to now take in leads, nurture those leads, understand your leads, understand consumer behavior, and then go apply it. So then that's when I started talking about CRMs and marketing, and now with the use of like AI, it just exploded. I cannot keep up. It's every day it's something new, but it's exciting. And I'm like, wow, you know, things that used to take us forever, writing email sequences, building landing pages, and just different things are now being able to be done within minutes. So that's how, that's kind of a long-winded way to explain my backstory of how I got here. But yeah, it was all by accident and it was a lot of fun.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with me. You know, it's ironic. I think a lot of us got into the field in similar ways. It's, you know, we saw a need, we were kind of drawn to it. We went there and all of a sudden we found out, wow, people are actually willing to pay me enough money. I can cover my mortgage and groceries and I can have fun in what I'm doing. So I totally get that. You made a comment along the way that I'd love to go back and talk about a little bit, because I think that's where a lot of our listeners are at right now. And that's that one, AI is just amazing with what it can do, but it's also overwhelming. And I think a lot of our listeners are really struggling with, what do I do? How do I integrate that? Where do I even start? In fact, we call ourselves the 91 Day AI Transformation Podcast because of the fact that we've seen so many clients that we work with fall into one of two camps. They're either, I love AI and I'm going to embrace it, I'm going to do it all today, which obviously doesn't work out even for people with ADD like me. We can't get it all done in one day. Or they're on the other end of the spectrum, and we're going to play the ostrich. We're going to bury our head in the sand. We're going to hope this whole AI thing just bypasses us and goes away. I obviously believe the right response is somewhere maybe a third of the way across. Let's start implementing it. And we always talk to people about what they should do in the first, say, 3 months. So if you're talking to business leaders, from your perspective, having had experience on the digital marketing side, which is a great way to integrate AI, what would you recommend to that listener of ours, Kimberly, who's going, okay, I've done a little bit as we're headed into 2025. I really know I need to embrace this. What should they be looking at doing in your mind, maybe in the first 3 months? Are there specifics that they should focus on? Obviously, we don't want them to do everything and then get overwhelmed and not do it, but we want them to make some progress. Do you have any thoughts? And by the way, for those listening, I've not prepped Kimberly on this at all. So she's just going to give me your thoughts on that. And what are your thoughts? Any questions about that or any thoughts you have, Kimberly, on that, you know, boy, what should that average business do in the first 90 days with AI to make it successful and to see some value? Any thoughts?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. So I have experience speaking and teaching technology skeptics and people who are a little bit overwhelmed. And that's actually my sweet spot. That gives me joy to give people those aha moments. So what I say about AI is what I say about CRMs or any piece of fast-moving technology is that you need to sit down and diagram and document what outcome you want. What does the end look like? And how does your customer get to that endpoint? How does your lead get to that endpoint? Draw it out, diagram it out. Because it's so easy to fall into these rabbit holes. You know, once you click on one ad for an AI thing on Facebook, you're going to get inundated with 30 more. You know,
Everything.
You can't log into any system now without seeing those little stars like, oh, it has AI in it now. So it's everywhere. So you cannot escape it. But what you can do is be able to filter out the noise by being strategic, saying, okay, well, for this quarter, I want to be able to produce content very quickly. For this quarter, maybe I want to understand my audience better. For this quarter, maybe we want to use AI to segment our audience. So have a very specific goal and what it looks like, and then find a tool to do that. I say that will eliminate like 80% of the clutter. Now, it's up to everybody to be disciplined, and that's not an area sometimes I'm really good at, especially because I'm a nerd. I want to try everything. But for people who are scared and skeptical, like by having that plan, it kind of keeps you focused on that North Star. You can say, all right, well, this tool says it can do that. Let's try it out and do only that strategy. I will say start off with one of the larger language models like a ChatGPT, Anthropic Claude. Mm. You know, you don't need to like purchase everything because I tell people they use the same APIs. So you can use, you're basically using that thing anyways. So I'm a big fan of ChatGPT for now. As like, there's nothing else that I feel comes close. There are a few others that I won't part with, like Perplexity. But just pick something and then make sure it's in alignment with the strategy that you do offline. And what I tell people too is actually close your laptop and just write it down, because that's the easiest way to stay focused. If you go on social media, if you go on anything, you're going to be sold to because it's on everything. So just be very clear and intentional and try to keep your tech stack as light as possible.
I love that advice. And it's so good to, of course, we all love it when people agree with us, but I often recommend the same thing. And it's, I think one of the hardest parts as a business owner, when we start getting into AI, like you mentioned, as soon as you start in anything, all of a sudden the ads start flowing in, and maybe flowing is not even an accurate way to describe it, because you're going to see ads for all kinds of tools. And admittedly, the marketing on all of them sounds amazing. Now, I will say the user experience on most of them does not hold up to the marketing. I've bought a lot of tools and asked for a lot of refunds on different things that, you know, did not live up to the slick marketing I got. But like you, I recommend, you know, start with ChatGPT. It's everybody knows it. It can do most of the things that you're going to need. And in my mind, at least, and I'd love to get your perspective on this, Kimberly, can get that business 80% of where it probably needs to go. And then after a while of using it, now you'll have a better understanding of what you need and what you don't need. Particularly, I love the comment you made about how so many of these specialty tools that we see are really, and I'm going to paraphrase you, this is not the words you use, but are really just lipstick on top of ChatGPT, and they're still using ChatGPT behind the scenes. I can't believe how many things I get, like, you know, automate your sales and get our sales bot. And all they're really doing is putting a new interface on it and giving you a dozen sales prompts that you can use and then using ChatGPT behind it. But they're charging, I saw one the other day, $190 a month for this sales tool. Now, I didn't admittedly go in and test it all out, but it's like, I can do all of that in ChatGPT by just typing in a couple prompts. I don't need your tool to do that. So that's, I think, a great advice and a good reminder that that's the type of thing that, yeah, you're going to see. But at the same point, I think it's worth the difficulty, because I believe as a business owner, if we don't embrace AI and we don't help our teams embrace AI, that our competition will. And that means we're going to likely lose two things in the future, both customers who want to get better support and better service through AI, which it can bring to us as a business. And we're also going to risk losing our team members, because those team members are going to see, wow, I can go leverage my skill with AI over at this other company, and you're not letting me do that, or you're not embracing that. And I think we're going to lose a lot of top-level employees, not because of AI is a bad thing, but because AI amplifies skill and experience in my perspective. So that employee that's been with you for 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, if you can teach them how to leverage AI, they can set the world on fire, because they've got all this experience. I just love what you say. Like I said, I could go on and on and on. That's so cool to hear you say that. From your perspective, as you look at AI, especially as we're heading into 2025 here, I know my crystal ball is a little bit cracked and definitely very cloudy, but where do you see some of the major improvements coming in 2025? Any perspectives there on what you think we're going to see as some of the big AI movers in 2025?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I have to look back on 2023. So I was using DALL-E 2, which now look back at some of those images and I'm like, whoa, this is ugly.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I look back at, you know, even pre 3.5 of ChatGPT and see how far things have come. You know, we have now the custom GPTs, and then there's agents, and there's so many different things that we can do. I honestly don't know where it's going to land, but I think it's going to become more accessible and more available to people, as they're going to be this AI war between companies, like who can roll things out the fastest. And I think we're going to see other things other than just pure large language models. Music, for example, I'm a big Suno enthusiast. So we're seeing that now. We're seeing other companies pop up in the music space. We're seeing other things pop up in the imaging space. So I think we're going to see more specialty services. And then I will also say, in the direction that I'm moving in, is I'm looking at particular use cases. When helping people adapt to AI technologies, one thing that I believe in is helping them solve a simple problem, like the main problem in their business first with it, or their organization. And what I think is going to happen is we're going to see more software, more solutions geared towards particular use cases, particular agents. For example, I'm looking at the nonprofit space now, fundraising. How do we leverage AI to do fundraising, to do grant proposals, grant writing, things like that? And when people can actually see themselves in the solution, I think that they're going to be more likely to adapt to it. So I think there's going to be a lot more of that for sure. A lot more agentic type of applications for sure. And I can't wait. Literally, that's going to be super exciting. So yeah, I mean, I honestly don't know because it changes every single week. Staying on top of it is challenging and fun at the same time, but I'm really looking forward to next year.
Yeah, I think we're going to continue to see a lot of that. I agree with, you know, where you're seeing the agentic stuff in particular, I think is going to be really big as we merge more automation and AI together and start taking a look at things. I know the conversations that I've had in the last just even 30 days with clients and businesses about identifying those areas that are repetitive within their business and trying to figure out how can we use AI and automation together to remove some of that burden from staff members that are like, okay, I do the same thing over and over and over. And let them explore some more skills. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. I appreciate that. Let's go back to what you do a little bit. So obviously I'm a big fan of AI and marketing. That's my background. I know that's your background as well. But from your perspective, what are some of the areas that AI, one, helps from a marketing perspective, but I'd also love to hear your perspective on things that AI maybe isn't well suited for in the marketing perspective. Could you share your thoughts on that at all, Kimberly?
Yeah. So one of the things that excites me being being kind of an analytic person, I really love using AI for market research. And one of my favorite AI tools right now, as of this recording, you know, could change, is Perplexity.
It could change by tomorrow. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. It's Perplexity. And I use it to create customer avatars and detailed customer profiles, including pain points, tangible benefits and buying decisions. So I really use it to analyze, to scan these scholarly articles and do a lot of research from there. Then I know how to build offers, and then I can put that information into other tools. So that's one way that I use it personally. And I think that that's overlooked because a lot of people want to get to the fun stuff. You know, they want to open up ChatGPT and say, create me a landing page. And then it's like, unlock your game-changing potential as you delve into, you know, and it sounds like that. And I've seen so many sales pages. I don't call businesses out, but I'm like, yeah, I know what you did.
You used ChatGPT.
Exactly. And you didn't give it context, and you didn't, like, you took the first response and you copy and pasted that into your system. I know. But yeah, so I think that having that full picture and using AI to ask and answer questions, just like, you know, you would just a researcher or a staff member, is super, super helpful. That's one thing that it does really well. It also does copywriting really well, but you know, it's garbage in, garbage out. You have to really make sure that you spend the time, like, not only like giving it context, but correcting it and then making sure that you check for understanding. So one little thing that I do, and I'm going to share with your audience too, because before I start anything, I say, okay, I am looking to hire a copywriter to help me write a sales page. I am, you know, this business owner, and attached is the details of my offer. I want you to apply for the job, and I want you to write me a cover letter, and then write me who you studied with and what techniques you use. Then it writes it out. It's like, oh, I'm happy to apply for your job, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, okay, congratulations, you made it to the final round. Can you please write me? So I make sure that it really understands the assignment before making it do things. And I give it that context because then it really, like, pulls in everything, and I'm like, okay, describe your role to me before we get started. And then, you know, it takes me about half as much time to give it that context as then it producing stuff for me, but the stuff that it produces for me is a lot better. So I think in that regards, AI does that really well. To answer your question of what it doesn't do well, I don't know. Like, I think on the one hand, yes, it helps us produce a lot quicker, but then the quality of the work can suffer. So right now, I you know, you can't go a day without scrolling and saying, oh, well, you know, make a book in under an hour, or, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Or just illustrate something in under 5 minutes. And I'm like, okay, well, are we taking the skill out of the production? Now, do we as consumers need to be extra vigilant and spotting things that were created using AI that maybe doesn't have that same level of artistry in it? So that's what worries me a little bit. I do see people teaching it like, okay, it's a panacea for everything, put it on everything, you know, click, go to bed, go home, and then wake up with money in your account. And that I don't really like so much, but I think that, you know, like Amazon and Google, and they're going to start cracking down on things that are obviously AI generated. So we're going to have to be smarter about how we use it and making sure that we still apply our skills to it. Anything it can't do, right now, I would say there's a lot, but that gap is getting a lot more narrow.
No, I agree with you. I think you made some really good points there. I think, yeah, there's so many things I could talk about. All of it to me kind of goes back to what we talked about amplifying skill and experience. Mm-hmm. You know, AI is not an easy button. It's an easier button in my mind. You mentioned mm-hmm. how, you know, I love, by the way, the training methodology you shared about, hey, you're applying for this position. What would you do? Mm-hmm. Putting it in the right context, giving it context, just candidly, no different, Kimberly, than if you and I were working on a project together. You know, if I walk up to your desk and say, hey, we need to create a press release, and I turn around and I walk mm-hmm. away and you go, okay, Jonathan, but what, for who, for what purpose? And I go, mm-hmm. no, just figure it out. You're mm-hmm. Even no matter how much skill you have, you're not going to be able to meet my objective and my desire because of the fact that I didn't give you any information and I refuse to answer that. And I think that's one of the things that especially mm-hmm. people that are new to AI do all the time. We kind of assume it can read our minds. So we go in and say things like, create a press mm-hmm. release for me. And it will do that because it's been trained mm-hmm. to fill in all the blanks and make assumptions. And we read it and we go, well, I'm not even in that line of business because we didn't give it any perspective. So I love how you talked about going through that process. I believe when you train AI, it can be absolutely amazing. And I think mm-hmm. that ties into the latter part that you were saying on some of the risks. I think, and I totally agree with you, I think that there are way too many people out there that, again, are purporting AI as this panacea. It's, you know, we've lived all our lives waiting for that money tree to grow in the backyard, and AI, it's that money tree. All you got to do is water it a little bit and go, like you said, mm-hmm. go to sleep and wake up in the morning and you're going to have everything you need. And you and I both know that's not true. I see that in my AI group all the time. People mm-hmm. will post, how do I make money with AI? And I'm like, no, you don't make money with AI as a general rule. You make money providing value to someone, just like you do with digital marketing. And then you use AI to make that process more efficient, to be able to provide better value, maybe to add additional things to the client so they're stickier, they don't churn, mm-hmm. or maybe to lower your costs because you are able to save money and time, but not, you know, it's not like I can turn out a year's worth of a nurture campaign in 30 seconds when it used to take me all day or all week to do that. But I might be able to cut that time in half and still do a really good job. So I think, like you said, that's a big thing. I love the ads for, you know, write a book in 30 minutes and become a bestseller. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, come on, get real. You can't even brainstorm about a book in 30 minutes. It's going to be a bestseller. But again, that sells and people I think buy into that. My personal perspective is I think a lot of this in 2025, as we talk, I think we're going to see a lot of this kind of wash out, because I think as more and more people start using it, it's going to become really apparent those people that used AI well, that leveraged their skill and experience, that trained it, and then used it to create really incredible, helpful content. And then that's probably going to be, you know, the old 80-20 rule. That's probably going to be 20%. Mm-hmm. The other 80% is going to be a bunch of junk that we look at and go, why in the world would I read that? That's not any useful. And I think, again, 2025 and probably still into 26, we're going to see some shifts there as the consumer becomes more aware of what's happening and make sure that they're doing that. One of the questions I have for you, I'm sure you've probably run into this, but I get people that, you know, will ask me, how did you do that with AI? And I'll share what I do. It's not some major secret. And then the response I often get back is, well, I tried that and it didn't work the same way. Have you ever had that happen to you where somebody said, hey, how did you do that, Kimberly? That turned out amazing. And you say, oh, sure, here's what I did. Here's the tool I used. And I'll even oftentimes share the prompt that I used, you know, and they're like, yeah, but mine looks different. How do you respond to people like that? Because I have an idea and I'd love to share with you, but I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's interesting because with anything, using AI prompting, using a tools, it's a skill. It's something that you not only do you train it, but you train yourself too. And it's not something that you could easily explain. So for example, back last year, I was doing AI generated images, and then I would put my face on it. And people are like, oh, wow, that's so cool. Can you show me how to do it? And then I would tell them and they're like, because it took a couple of steps, right? It wasn't just a one and done thing. It took some process, and they didn't see the ones that I had to throw away. There are a lot of ones that we got to throw away. Like, I don't like that one. So we only post the good ones. And so, you know, they'll try and they're like, oh, I don't like this. I don't like that. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, with anything, it's still a skill, you know, you can copy someone's prompt, but you may not get what you want because you have to spend the time developing it for the outcome that you want. That's, you know,
right. Yes.
And I think that there has to be a level of patience that is not always communicated. It's kind of like that microwave, you know, you put it in, you get something out. It's definitely not like that. I think I spend three times as much time giving a context, training things, as I do the output. The output's easy. Output takes mere seconds, or I would say minutes. But me giving it the context, checking for understanding, and making sure that I've primed it so that if I'm doing a piece of music or if I'm doing an image, I've defined a style and I've given a character reference. I love Midjourney, by the way, giving a character reference or giving it this or that, that I'm getting the output that I like. And then I'm giving it the proper seed number to provide the same art style. So a lot of people don't really understand that there's a lot that goes into that. So if I post something on social media, that's just after hours of, like, you know, getting that result to me. So I think that the shortcuts are definitely not there, and it, what appears to be a shortcut definitely isn't.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you bring up the imagery, because I've actually found the exact same thing. I have a brand style of image that I use and I create, and I create hundreds of images every week. I don't use hundreds, I use dozens. Mm-hmm. And then people will come back and go, but I tried that, and I'll often share the exact prompt I use. And they're like, yeah, but I got different results. And I'm like, well, you don't understand. I use Midjourney and I got four results. I picked one. And then I went further on that, and I maybe created variations of that. So the prompt itself didn't change, but yeah, I threw out probably 80% of the images that I created and didn't use. The other example that you mentioned that I find so true, I don't know if you've used the new Flux and the Laura training that you can do, which is really amazing, because finally someone like me with a beard can actually do that, because the other AI stuff just massacred my beard. I can imagine you with long hair had the same thing. It does the face pretty good, but then it's like the hair got all messed up. It couldn't handle that. And Flux Laura is great in what it can do, but just like you said, I'll post images and people are like, oh, I want to do that. And I actually did a video walkthrough of it, and it's not long. It took about 20 minutes and I shortcutted parts of it. Like, I didn't show the hour I spent finding the 30 some images that I uploaded to Laura, because of course nobody wants to watch me just go through that on my computer. And even at like a 20 minute training video, people are like, oh, well, that's a lot more work than I thought. And I'm like, yeah, and 20 minutes doesn't get you there. It probably took me 2 hours. But now that I've trained it, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, even with the large language models, once you train it and you invest that time in training, much like taking a class in real life or anything else, now AI has that skill and has that memory. And now you can leverage it and get things done faster. Because now if I need a picture of me standing on a stage speaking to people with a navy blazer on and a Superman baseball cap, I can go into Flux and I probably have to create 20 images, but one of those 20 will likely be good enough that I can use. And I can do that in probably 10 minutes now. But I had to spend hours training it And like you said, learning how to use the prompts, learning, you know, what happens when I do this, and learning some of the idiosyncrasies. Like for me, for whatever reason, in the characters I create Midjourney, it wants to put orange on every character. It wants to put them in an orange sweater and an orange shirt. I don't know why. So I have to remember regularly to put in no orange. And then all of a sudden I get entirely different things. But those, I think, are the subtleties that most people don't necessarily want to go through. And that's okay. They don't have to go through that. But that's also why I think that AI provides so much opportunity, because those of us that do want to create prompts, whether that's marketing prompts or how to write a best SOP or even how to write a book. I mean, you can absolutely write a book with AI. I've done it multiple times, but it's not a 1 hour process. It's not even a 1 day process. It's, you know, I may move that book from 6 months of work down to a few weeks of work, but it's still, you know, it's still a lot of work to get it done well. I love how you're sharing. That's so interesting, since again, I shared up front, you and I have just met, and so to hear the similarities that we're running into, I always love to do that. So from your perspective, the other thing I love to talk about, and this may be a controversial topic, but those are always fun to deal with. I know a lot of people, especially when it comes to AI art, but even with other stuff, are really starting to get nervous about the fact that, oh my goodness, you know, are we stealing other people's stuff when we do that? I'm going to share my perspective, and I'd love you to share yours, and you don't have to agree with me at all. But I look back at the way that I learn and the way that I know other people learn. So, for example, if you came to me and said, Jonathan, I need you to, let's say, write a book. Before I would write that book, I would read multiple other books on the same topic to learn. I would do research. I would do all those types of things. And all of that would influence me in the book that I ultimately wrote. Now, I may use a couple sentences, I may quote a couple people in my book, but I wouldn't wholesale copy and paste what they did into my book, but it would absolutely influence what I did. And I believe for the most part, especially when prompted well, big asterisk there, when prompted well, I think that's how AI works. It's learning from other things and it's creating things, but it's, when prompted well, it's not just copying and pasting. I'm not going to one of my favorite authors, Michael Hyatt, for example, love his book Platform and his other books. I'm not just copying and pasting sections of that book and claiming it as my own. It's using that as knowledge to learn how to write a book. So I don't see that it went and done properly, again, as plagiarism, just like writing anything. I think that's important. What's your perspective on that? Because I know there's both sides, and I get that. I talked to an author yesterday who's like, but I don't want somebody to ever upload my book to the internet. And I'm like, but you sell a Kindle version of that. You realize that allows anybody that buys your book to convert it into a PDF. Well, but I don't want them to do that. How can I stop them? And I'm like, I don't think you can. I mean, even if you have a book, technically I can go and put it on my, I've got a, you know, a Brother printer and scanner that I bought at Office Max, that if I unbound your book, I could feed it into and turn the entire book into a PDF in a few minutes by scanning it all in. It's nothing special. I'm going all over, but let's start with how about the plagiarism, the copy, the stealing with AI? What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. And this is how I put it, right? So I'm not a painter, but let's say you take a famous painter, you take me, you give us the same set of paint, easels, equipment, paint brushes, and then you say, go paint a picture. The outcome's going to be a lot different. And so I see AI as a tool in the hand of a great painter is going to look different than a tool in my hand and I can't paint. So I think that for domain experts, like I feel for the artists, and I feel, not when I say I feel for them, is I feel for them because they're worried about it and I don't want to diminish anyone's feelings. However, I do see it in that that context of, okay, you have this tool now. You know how to adjust for lighting, adjust for art style. You know what looks good and what does not look good. You know what works, what doesn't work. You can use your own imagery that you create as a derivative for your own prompts in Midjourney. Mm-hmm. You can do things in Midjourney that I probably cannot, just because you have that vision, you have that eye and that art style. Same thing for copywriters. They know a good copy. sounds like. They know what crappy copy sounds like. They know how to ask for certain techniques or certain styles or certain emotions or certain things. They know how to evaluate the outputs of that that AI a lot better than, let's say, Joe Schmo writing a landing page will.
Yeah.
So I see that as, okay, we've made it easier to accomplish a thing, but those who have that talent, if they devote themselves to learning how to use a new tool, will go so much further than people who don't have that talent. And on the plagiarism aspect, I think AI can actually go the other way too in detecting plagiarism. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I were to just take your book and then just say, oh, now it's my book, you can easily use an AI tool to say, nope, Kem stole a book. Not that I would do that.
Right.
But, you know, you can easily use AI to then detect plagiarism. You can use AI to detect stolen images, you know, spams, you know, different scams and things, different mm-hmm. things like that. So I think the pendulum can swing both ways. How I would frame it to an artist or anybody concerned about their work is that, you know, the way large language models work is they don't take the whole thing as a whole. It's a training. So
yes,
because there's pieces of it that it's learning, you know, it's not going to give me your entire book back if I ask for something, you know. So I think just making sure that we educate people on how large language models work can alleviate some of those fears.
I love that. You know, it makes me think of one of the things I just shared with an author the other day, and they were concerned. As I mentioned, they were really worried about what. Then I said, well, do a favor yourself. You know your style. You know what you write. Why don't you go ahead, take a PDF of your book and go ahead and upload it to ChatGPT and ask it to write like you, and then tell me how close did it come? Mm-hmm. And they did, and they came back and they're like, well, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't me. And I'm like, mm-hmm. if you yourself can't get it to do it, how is anyone else? And, you know, example I'll use, I have a great friend, Ken Moskowitz from Ad Zombies, and Ken is an ad guru. I mean, he's written Super Bowl ads, all that type of stuff. I mean, when it comes to using the right words to get attention, Ken's amazing. I'm blessed to be in a situation where Ken shared a lot of his tools and his knowledge with me and everything else. But to this day, Ken can still write better ad copy with AI in half the time than I can. Mm-hmm. And it'll literally be 2 to 3 times better. And it'll take him half the time because, again, it's amplifying his skill and experience. Now, I'm writing better ad copy than what I wrote a year ago because of what Ken has taught me. But at the end of the day, if I really have a campaign that's got to hit home, I go, Ken, mm-hmm. I need your help on this. And he's like, I've taught you everything. I'm like, yeah, but it's better when you do it. And it is, because just like you said, it's it makes mm-hmm. me think of a carpenter. You know, I can go to Home Depot and I can probably buy almost any tool that someone that would come to my house to do home repair or build or even a home builder that they would have. But yet you don't want to live in a house that Jonathan built because I don't know how to mm-hmm. do that effectively. Just because I can get the tool doesn't mean I can be good at doing that.
Exactly.
So I love the way you describe that. That makes so much mm-hmm. sense and I think brings it home. That's probably one of the things that I think is missing in so much of AI right now, and that's that so many people are talking about it from a theoretical perspective mm-hmm. and are not talking about it in practical. And I love how you make things so practical and easy to understand. That's mm-hmm. really cool. That's amazing. Well, Kimberly, as we bring the plane in for a landing here and wrap it up, if people want to reach out to you and learn a little bit more, connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, the best way for anyone to reach out to me, again, I go by Kimberly Inez Mays online, and my website is KimberlyInezMays.com. You can send me an email at kim@KimberlyInezMays.com, or just find me. You could just search for me. That's my handle as well on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, again, Kimberly, thank you so much for the time today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Let's make sure we keep in contact. I would love to see where things go, and I love to continue to get your perspective as things change so rapidly as they are here in the AI yeah. world. You said literally by the time we stop pressing record today, we may get an announcement from ChatGPT or Anthropic or somebody telling us that there's this brand new tool that's just amazing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is really changing rapidly. Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much. I want to thank our listeners as well for listening in on the podcast today. We so value you. If you find these conversations that we're having about AI valuable, I'd love it if you'd just give us a thumbs up. And if you'd subscribe to our channel, that means the world to us as well. Thank you, guys. Make it a great day, and we'll see you in the next episode.